You are now listening to the OrthoBullets podcast.
This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of intertrochanteric fractures from the trauma section on orthobullets.com. Intertrochanteric fractures are extracapsular fractures of the proximal femur between the greater and lesser trochanters. As far as epidemiology, the incidence is roughly the same for intertrochanteric fractures as femoral neck fractures, and with respect to the demographics, the female-to-male ratio is between 2 to 1 and 8 to 1. Typically, patients who sustain intertrochanteric fractures are older in age than patients who sustain femoral neck fractures. As far as risk factors, proximal humerus fractures actually increases the risk of hip fractures for 1 year. Clinton et al. Performed a level 2 study of 8,049 women that demonstrated that proximal humerus fractures independently increased the risk of a subsequent hip fracture. The risk was more than 5 times in the first year after the humeral fracture, but was not associated with a significant increase in hip fracture risk in subsequent years. The mechanism of intertrochanteric fractures in the elderly are low-energy falls in osteoporotic patients, and high-energy trauma is typically responsible for these fractures in the young. As far as prognosis, non-union and malunion rates are usually low. There is a 20 to 30% mortality risk in the first year following fracture, and the factors that increase mortality include male gender, which has 25 to 30% mortality associated with it, versus female, which has a 20% mortality associated with it. Mortality is higher in intertrochanteric fractures versus femoral neck fractures. Other risk factors of increased mortality include an operative delay of more than 2 days, age of greater than 85 years old, 2 or more pre-existing medical conditions, and an ASA classification of 3 and 4 increases mortality as well. On the flip side, surgery within 48 hours decreases 1 year mortality, and early medical optimization as well as co-management with medical hospitalists or geriatricians can improve outcomes as well. To briefly go over the anatomy of these injuries, the intertrochanteric area exists between greater and lesser trochanters. It's made of dense trabecular bone, and the calcar femorale is a vertical wall of dense bone that extends from the posterior medial aspect of the femoral shaft to the posterior portion of the femoral neck, and this helps determine stable versus unstable fracture patterns. And as far as classification, stability of the fracture pattern is arguably the most reliable method of classification of intertrochanteric fractures. A stable intertrochanteric fracture is defined as an intact posterior medial cortex, and the clinical significance of this is that an intact posterior medial cortex will resist medial compressive loads once reduced. An unstable intertrochanteric fracture is defined as comminution of the posterior medial cortex, and the clinical significance of this is that fracture of the posterior medial cortex will collapse into varus and retroversion when loaded. Examples of an unstable fracture pattern include fractures with a large posterior medial fragment with a displaced lesser trochanter, fractures with subtrochanteric extension, and reverse obliquity fractures, which are characterized as oblique fracture lines extending from the medial cortex both laterally and distally. On physical exam, these patients present with a painful, shortened, externally rotated lower extremity. As far as imaging, recommended radiographic views include an AP pelvis, an AP of the hip, cross-table lateral, and full-length femur radiographs. CT or MRI may be useful if radiographs are negative, but the physical exam is consistent with fracture. MRI is useful to evaluate intertrochanteric extension with isolated greater trochanteric fracture patterns. As far as treatment, non-operative management involves non-weight bearing with early out of bed to chair, and the indications are non-ambulatory patients as well as patients at high risk for perioperative mortality. Outcomes of non-operative treatment include high rates of pneumonia, urinary tract infections, decubiti, and DVT. Operative treatment is more common and includes sliding hip compression screws, cephalomedullary nailing, and arthroplasty. Indications for a sliding hip compression screw include stable intertrochanteric fractures, and as far as outcomes, sliding hip compression screws have equal outcomes when compared to intramedullary hip nails for stable fracture patterns. Cephalomedullary nails are indicated for stable fracture patterns, unstable fracture patterns, reverse obliquity fractures, which fail 56% of the time when they're treated with sliding hip screws, by the way. And other indications for cephalomedullary nails include subtrochanteric extension and lack of integrity of the femoral wall, which is associated with increased displacement and collapse when treated with a sliding hip screw. And as far as outcomes, cephalomedullary nails have equivalent outcomes to sliding hip screws for stable fracture patterns, and their use has significantly increased in the last decade. Arthroplasty is indicated for severely comminuted fractures, pre-existing symptomatic degenerative arthritis, osteoporotic bone that is unlikely to hold internal fixation, and salvage for failed internal fixation. Now, let's quickly go over the techniques for these operative options. With a sliding hip compression screw, you must obtain the correct neck shaft relationship, and remember that a lag screw with the tip apex distance of greater than 25 millimeters is associated with increased failure rates, and four-hole plates show no benefit clinically or biomechanically over two-hole plates. The advantages of sliding hip compression screws include that they allow dynamic interfragmentary compression, they have a relatively low cost, and there is no violation of hip abductors. The disadvantages include that it involves an open technique, there is increased blood loss, and they are not advisable in unstable fracture patterns, as they may result in collapse, limb shortening, and medialization of the shaft. Another disadvantage of sliding hip compression screws are that they can cause an anterior spike malreduction in left-sided, unstable fractures due to screw torque. Intramedullary or cephalomedullary hip nails have both short and long implant options. Short implants with optional distal locking can be used for standard obliquity fractures, and long implants can be used for standard obliquity fractures, reverse obliquity fractures, or intertrochanteric fractures with subtrochanteric extension. As with any option, there are pros and cons of cephalomedullary hip nails. Pros include that a percutaneous approach can be used, there's minimal blood loss, and they may be used in unstable fracture patterns. Cons include the risk of periprosthetic fracture, they cost more than sliding hip screws, and they require violation of hip abductors for insertion. And as far as arthroplasty as an option, a calcar replacing prosthesis is often needed, and you must attempt fixation of the greater trochanter to the shaft. The pros of arthroplasty is possible earlier return for full weight bearing, and cons include increased blood loss, and they may require a prosthesis that some surgeons are unfamiliar with. Complications of surgical management of intertrochanteric fractures include implant failure and cutout, anterior perforation of the distal femur, non-union, and malunion. Implant failure and cutout is the most common complication and usually occurs within the first 3 months. The cause is typically due to a tip apex distance of greater than 45 millimeters, which is associated with a 60% failure rate. Treatment of this complication in young patients is a corrective osteotomy and/or revision, open reduction, and internal fixation, while the treatment in the elderly is a total hip arthroplasty. Anterior perforation of the distal femur can occur following intramedullary screw fixation due to a mismatch of the radius of curvature of the femur, which is shorter, and the implant, which is longer. Non-union occurs in less than 2% of cases. Treatment involves revision, open reduction, internal fixation, with bone grafting or proximal femoral replacement. With respect to malunion, varus and rotational deformities are common, and the treatment involves corrective osteotomies. That's all for this review on intertrochanteric fractures. Look out for questions related to this topic on this weekend's question session, and hopefully this episode will have prepared you for that review. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.